From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, September 26, 2025. Maine Governor Janet Mills is reiterating her opposition to question 2 on the November ballot. The proposal would allow family members to petition a judge to temporarily confiscate firearms from a person deemed dangerous to themselves or others. Steve Missler reports.
Mills used a column in the Portland Press-Herald to outline her criticism of an extreme risk protection order proposal backed by gun safety advocates. The governor, a Democrat, argued that the referendum would undermine the so-called yellow flag law she helped craft with a prominent gun rights group in 2019. She also argued that the proposed red flag law could endanger and confuse family members. Gun safety groups have rejected those claims, noting that more than 20 other states have red flag laws, and that the Maine proposal is another tool for family members who don't want to involve police. Police can also use the process to disarm someone deemed dangerous. Mills has defended Maine's yellow flag law ever since it came under scrutiny when it wasn't used to stop a gunman in Lewiston from carrying out the worst mass shooting in state history. Question 2 is a direct outgrowth of that opposition. Gun safety advocates proposed the Citizens Initiative when the Democratic-controlled legislature declined to advance a red flag bill in the wake of the Lewiston tragedy. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The governor has also announced the creation of the Maine Life Sciences Center and almost $3 million in grants for a new laboratory in Portland. The new center, created by the Maine Technology Institute, should attract investment in the life sciences, including work in biotechnology, healthcare innovations, and marine science. In addition, $2.7 million in grants will go to build the Maine Life Science Incubator, a laboratory to provide space and equipment to support new companies in the industry. The facility will be built in Portland by the end of next year. The Mills administration says the life science industry accounts for $2.3 billion in economic activity and 10,000 jobs across the state. A federal judge in Rhode Island has blocked the Trump administration from attaching immigration enforcement provisions to federal disaster relief funding, ruling in favor of Maine and a coalition of other states. Ari Snyder has more.
Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry and counterparts from 19 other states in the District of Columbia filed the lawsuit in May. They argued the Department of Homeland Security had overstepped its authority by requiring state and local governments to help enforce federal immigration law as a condition for receiving FEMA funding. On Wednesday, a federal district court judge found those requirements were, quote, arbitrary and capricious, as well as unconstitutional. The order permanently blocks the administration from enforcing the new requirements against the plaintiff states and against local governments within those states. Maine is also part of a separate lawsuit against the Federal Department of Transportation, challenging similar immigration provisions. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
With severe drought stretching across much of the state, groundwater levels are low. More than 170 Mainers have reported their wells have run dry this year. That's more than the last 4 years combined, according to the Maine Emergency Management Agency. Nick Stasulis of the U.S. Geological Survey and the Maine Drought Task Force says that short, intense periods of rain might help a little, but it depends on the type of well.
If you have a drilled bedrock well, it's likely that you saw little to no improvement because this water isn't enough to work its way down into the aquifer and kind of replenish those deeper wells.
Roughly half of Mainers rely on well water. Two Massachusetts men pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court in Portland this week to charges stemming from a Saco drive-by shooting last year. 20-year-old Joshua Estrada and 22-year-old Giancarlo Sobrante are charged with conspiring to distribute cocaine, perpetuating a drive-by shooting, and using a firearm in relation to a drug trafficking crime. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, last February, Estrada and Abrante fired a handgun into another vehicle in Saco during a drug trade dispute. Then they fled the scene, driving against traffic, ran a red light, and crashed into another vehicle and a school bus before fleeing on foot. The two now face a mandatory minimum sentence of 20 years in prison and a fine of up to $10 million. A third defendant in the case, Jason Johnson Rivera, is expected to go to trial later this year. Home sales rose nearly 10% in Maine last month compared to the previous August. It's the sixth consecutive month that the number of homes on the market and the number of sales have gone up, according to the Maine Association of Realtors. The inventory of homes for sale in Maine is also at its highest level in 5 years. Home sales rose nearly 29% and 21% in Lincoln and Knox counties, respectively. In Cumberland County, sales were up nearly 13%. Prices also increased last August. The median sales price went up just more than 2% in August compared to last year. The Maine CDC has identified a 29th case in an HIV cluster centered in Penobscot County. The agency reports that most of the patients have experienced homelessness in the last year and are injection drug users. Many are also diagnosed with hepatitis C infections. The CDC first identified the cluster in October 2023. Providers say because many patients are asymptomatic, the true number of cases is likely much higher. Maine Senate President Matty Daughtry is on a statewide tour to learn more about the challenges facing Maine's beleaguered child care system. During her initial stops, she's heard calls to expand free school meals to all preschool students, to increase child care workers' access to health care benefits, and to create more opportunities for students entering the field to work and study at the same time. Daughtry visited Kids Cove Child Care and Learning Center in Sanford recently. Maddie Smith was there.
As buses arrive from local elementary schools, a new batch of kids floods the Kids Cove playground. Today happens to be picture day, and by mid-afternoon, 10 hours after they left home, some kids' outfits are looking a little bit worse for wear.
You get all over your shirt. Was this before or after pictures?
It was marker.
I know, but was the marker before or after pictures?
It was after pictures.
Oh, good.
Katie Menendi-Hall says her daughter April and son Ryan have been at Kids Cove for more than 6 years, first in full-time daycare and now in the before and after school program. Menendi-Hall says it's been a positive force in their lives.
They are getting so much more out of being in a daycare environment than my kids would have been if they stayed home with me. Just like the friendships they've made, the things they've learned, the pace at which they've learned them are very impressive.
But like many child care programs in Maine, Kids Cove comes at a significant cost for parents, ranging from $300 to $330 a week, depending on age. And that cost can be a major obstacle for working Mainers, including Daughtry herself.
I'll be blunt, like I really want to have kids and I don't know if I can afford to have kids. And I know my story is not alone.
According to the Maine Center for Economic Policy, a progressive advocacy group, an estimated 18,000 people in the state are currently out of the labor force due to a lack of childcare. And many of those who are paying for care are struggling to make ends meet.
We just kind of feel like middle class is deteriorating. With the amount of money that my husband and I bring in, we should be living very comfortably. And the reality is we're not.
Megan Downs has a daughter at Kids Cove and says fees went up by $75 a week in July for the first time since the pandemic. And she says that cost will somehow have to be absorbed by the already strained family budget.
I could not imagine pulling my child from the people that have helped me raise her and the people that love her. Like it was a matter of us, like, we need to figure it out.
But figuring it out has been difficult. The daycare lost 15 families after the fee hike this summer. Downs has applied for a grant through the state's Child Care Affordability Program, but has been on the wait list since it ran out of funding. She's banking on a federal subsidy that's expected to come in when her husband is deployed with the National Guard for the next year. Kids Cove owner Jennifer Michaud says she had to increase prices this summer in order to keep her staff.
You feel for the people in your community, and they are already strained on the rising cost of everything else in life. And the last thing I wanted to do was add to that burden. But at the end of the day, I don't think I could continue to keep my doors open if I didn't raise the rates.
But even with the extra income, she cannot afford to offer her employees health care benefits, summers off, or match competing salary offers from public schools. Instead, she tries to build flexibility into her workers' schedules, offer more paid time off, and free childcare for their own kids. And she tells would-be employees that she will take them for as long as they are willing to stay.
If you don't see yourself here in 2 years, but I can get you for a solid 2 years, let's do it. Let's make them the best 2 years that we can. If you choose to go into a public school, I lose most of my employees to a public school.
The state has tried to help by offering wage supplements to early childhood educators since 2021. Daughtry's bill to continue those supplements this past session won bipartisan support and passed unanimously in both chambers. The funding will expire in 2027. Daughtry says the industry needs more help and soon.
If we want to not be known as the oldest state in the nation and instead be the best place to be a kid, we got to work on things like this. It's the best investment. It's not partisan, and we need to be doing better, and we can do better.
Daughtry hopes the tour, which ends October 16th, will inform childcare legislation she intends to bring to committee during the session that starts in January. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
Students, teachers, and families are back into the swing of the school year. Summer's technically over, but lingering warm temperatures can make it feel like it's not. That's especially true in schools where many old buildings are not equipped with air conditioning. But as Molly N. King reports, as part of a collaboration with the Portland Press Herald, a new law may be starting to change the way school boards and administrators address the heat.
10-year-old Acadia Boyer of Oxford, Maine, still remembers a hot September day at school in 2023.
It got to like 100 degrees, and I was upstairs, so it was really hot because heat rises. So I just come home being like, it's so hot at school, and I was like sweating and like not wanting to go to school.
School was back in session at Oxford Elementary, but there was an early fall heat wave that lasted about a week. Acadia's mom, Shauna Boyer, attended an open house for parents and recalls being shocked at how warm it was inside the school.
It was like sweltering. You stood in the room and I didn't even want to really be there.
A year after that, my mom brought in temperature things.
There are thermostats in the buildings. However, they were maxed out at 94 degrees.
According to the 2025 Maine School Building Inventory Report, nearly a quarter of schools in Maine lack air conditioning, and only 15% of schools have it in the majority of rooms in the building. Many school administrators are aware of the problem, but getting funding to address it is a challenge. Federal grant programs for energy upgrades to school buildings have been canceled, and there's limited state funding to go around. Chris Howell, superintendent of the Raymond Windham School District, says the lack of air conditioning hasn't been a huge problem until the past 5 years or so.
We actually had a couple days in which we ended up sending students home because the heat index in classrooms just got so, so high.
Classrooms on the upper levels have it particularly bad, according to teachers throughout the state, who say they try to cool rooms down by turning off the lights, pulling the curtains, and bringing in fans from home.
You're a teacher, so you just keep going. But I would get really tired, headachy, drank a lot of water, but that's still that dehydration factor gets the better of you.
Sarah Childs teaches third grade at Raymond Elementary. Her second floor classroom has a wall full of windows with a lovely view looking out over Sebago Lake. But for safety reasons, she's only able to open the windows a maximum of 4 inches, not enough for a box fan or to get the air seriously circulating. She says she can notice the effect heat has on her students.
You can see it. Their little cheeks will get pink and, you know, we just focus on hydrate.
There are no state standards for indoor temperatures in schools, but studies have shown that students who learn in hot classrooms are more likely to experience fatigue, headaches, and difficulty concentrating. They're also more likely to miss school and perform poorly on tests. As human-caused climate change warms the planet, the number of days over 90 degrees is expected to at least double across parts of Maine by 2050. Shauna Boyer says she realized the heat was here to stay.
I was looking at temperature kind of guidelines and how we continue to go up and up and up. And so this is going to be something that I think Maine is going to start to see a lot more of.
So she brought the issue to her local representative in Oxford, State Senator Rick Bennett. He sponsored a bill that requires all school districts throughout the state to set temperature standards for their buildings.
It is a recognition of the fact that our temperatures have changed, our climate has changed, and temperatures are often just terribly, terribly warm to be educating kids.
Lawmakers passed the bill. Now, all Maine school districts will be tasked with setting temperature standards for their districts.
Really ideal learning is usually between 68 and 73 degrees Fahrenheit. And many times, particularly in the shoulder seasons, the temperature in the classroom far exceeds that.
Bennett says the new law is a first step and was designed to avoid undue hardship for districts that may not be able to afford upgrades right away. Notably, there's no deadline for this. The DOE does have guidance stating that temperatures must be a comfortable environment for employees and students. Raymond Elementary got a serious upgrade to their HVAC system this summer, new air source heat pumps. Superintendent Chris Howell says the district has slowly been working on upgrading the energy systems of each of its buildings. And staff tell him it's a noticeable difference.
Just kids' attitudes and kids' energy and willingness to really step up to the next activity when they're not sitting there sweating all over their desk and, you know, totally flush with heat makes a big difference.
When Childs walked in on her first day to the newly climate-controlled building, she says it felt
amazing. I'm like, wow, I'm not going to die every day.
Now, the temperature hovers between 70 and 72 degrees. Bill Hansen, the facilities director, can see the temperature in each room of each building in the district from his mission control on his two big computer monitors and make real-time adjustments. Hansen says the district investing in newer, greener technologies makes financial sense, too.
You know, we can save $80,000 on utilities and not increase it. That's potentially a position for an ed tech that could be working with a child. If we save $100,000, that's a teacher that we could have working with benefits, you know, working with a child.
School boards are required by the new law to set minimum and maximum temperature standards available on school websites. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly N. King.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning starting at 8 for Weekend Edition. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening and have a nice weekend.